I was going to talk on 12 contributions, but I did some research on what other people thought, and I realized that I was headed a different way. Well, that's my life. But anyway, I looked through these, and it's like, no, none of these are what I'm thinking about. I realized that there are two ways to talk about importance. In the top row, you can talk in terms of topics, variability, confounding, etc., etc., and you can talk about how they logically relate to our discipline. This is important because it supports this, etc. It's like, that's not where I was thinking when I did importance, when I turned in my abstract before I did my research. What I was thinking about was socially, what has made the greatest contribution to the human endeavor, the human condition, etc. Or, since I come from a critical thinking background, what has really affected our thinking? What kind of fallacies are out there? When you teach critical thinking, oftentimes it's a list of fallacies. I've never seen statistics taught that way, but that's how I wanted to come at it. So I wanted to focus on these items, and realizing that I didn't have a lot of time, I'm going to lay out the overview, mention a few of the things we agree on, and then I want to move to one that I don't think there's agreement on at all, that I consider tremendously important. So, contributions. Association is not causation. That's a big one. Big one. No problem there. And on the randomness side, I'd say either the sampling distribution or Fisher causation. I mean, the FDA lives on the basis of random trials. We wouldn't have the medical devices trials without that. That's really important. And yet some of our intro statistics textbooks don't even include that part. And that's sad. That's sad. I feel like our students should go away with an understanding of what are the major contributions our discipline has made to the human endeavor. What I want to do is talk about the right side. Because the 2016 update to the GAIS guidelines have opened the door for a broader, a more holistic, if you will, course. If you haven't seen those guidelines, it's the most important thing you need to do. Study Appendix B. Multivariate thinking, observational studies, confounding. You have to realize that when John McKenzie at a JSN session in, I think, 2004, put up a list of the 50 topics that we could choose from. Confounding, observational studies weren't even on the list. The discipline is changing radically with this change. So, on that side, comparisons, ratios, models, study designs. That's critical when you're talking about confounding. The t-test doesn't care what kind of study design as long as there's some randomness involved. But when you're talking about confounding, study design suddenly becomes critical. What I want to do is to talk about what I consider the second most important event in the history of statistical education. It has to do with observational studies. The first one, I'd say, Fisher causation. That, for me, is where it's at. There's one person that talked on observational studies saying they're only good for generating hypotheses. Otherwise, they're exploratory data analysis. That's how you should look at them. I'm in a business area. I'm teaching students that are in poli-sci. In those areas, you don't have the luxury of random assignment. In some cases, it's unethical, immoral, or impossible. And so we have to use observational studies. So I think our discipline needs to take these on in a little different way than just saying, don't cross the street except at the corner. People are going to do it. We didn't. I want to talk about a fallacy, what I call the butterfly fallacy. One of my students came up to me after I'm teaching this confounding and stuff, and he said, well, you've convinced me of one thing, Shield. I'll never trust a statistical association again. Now, I want my students to be critical thinkers, But my goal is not to create cynics. And I thought, uh-oh, this is not good. And when I talked to the student a little more, I could see this is what the student had in their mind, that this unknown, unmeasured confounder, regardless of the size, it could be as small as a butterfly flapping its wings over the Pacific, could nullify or reverse an association. Now, this is the problem, and I say this is one reason, a good reason, that statistical educators have not taught much in this area. We don't want to create cynics. We don't want to bring our discipline into disrepute. So let's go back to what I consider the second most important thing in the history of statistics, and that was the smoking causes cancer discussion in the 50s. I don't think I've seen this in any intro statistics textbook. Here we have some data. Roughly, smokers are 10 times as likely to develop lung cancer. And some U.S. statisticians wanted to support, in some sense, that smoking in some sense caused lung cancer. So Ronald Fisher, arguably the guru of statistics, wrote a short half-column article noting that, by the way, people, in case you haven't forgotten everything, association is not causation. And we all salute that in an observational study. Now, Sir Ronald was a smoker. Sir Ronald was not stupid. He got data from a German twin study that showed there was a difference in smoking preference between fraternal and identical twins. Now, supposing you're one of the U.S. statisticians that says, this data looks really strong, a factor of 10. This looks powerful, and here comes Sir Ronald saying, association is not causation, and by the way, I got data to show that genetics could be a confounder that could nullify or reverse the observed association. I think if I'd been one of the U.S. statisticians, I would have just, okay, I'm out of here. But person I really admire, Jerome Cornfield. You may not know it, he created the odds ratio, the relative risk ratio. I've got a web page on my site dedicated to him. I consider him really important. And what he did in replying to Fisher is what I want to talk about here. And then how I teach this to my students is where I'm headed. So Cornfield proved mathematically that if you wanted to nullify or reverse an association, the relative risk of the confounder had to be bigger than the relative risk in the association. Fisher never replied. We don't know what that means, but the U.S. statisticians went on to talk about how strongly the data was in supporting that. My comment was, Cornfield's minimum effect size is as important to observational studies as is the use of randomized assignment to experimental studies. That's my take on this. These are two equally important things. So, how do I teach this to my students? We got some hospitals on the left side there. City has a higher death rate than rural. Where do you want to go?
Rural.
But what about patient condition? Poor condition, they were carried, dragged into the hospital. Good condition, they walked into the hospital. As long as the ratio, the difference, either one, is bigger on the right than the right side has met the necessary condition to nullify or reverse what's on the left. The students can look at that and say, well, sure, bigger trumps smaller. Got it. And they're off and running. So that's the first thing I teach. The second thing I'm teaching, I've just started this. What I did before was great if you know what the confounder is and you've measured it, you just haven't taken it into account. What about all the confounders that you don't know about? Well, in statistics, we're into modeling. Well, how would you model something you don't know about? Well, what's the simplest model I can think of? Something that has a long slope that starts up here at 1 and goes down. Oh, an exponential. One thing. Okay. And all I have to do is pick that one parameter, set it at a relative risk of 2, and I can say that if you've got a relative risk of, say, 3, 86% of the confounders are inadequate to reverse or nullify this kind of a thing. It gives you a way of talking about the strength of an association in terms of its ability to resist the influence of confounders. Well, this all came out of the air, seemingly. Take a look at some data. Here's relative risk of health outcomes between obese and non-obese, arranged in descending order among the women. The average for women was a little over 3, the men a little over 2. I'm using an average of 2 because I'm presuming they don't have all the small stuff, the noise. You say, oh, it's probably not bad. But that tells me immediately that just the items that are in the top area that are shaded, those are the ones that you should look at and take seriously. You need some way, just like statistical significance, to make a first cut. And this is one way of doing it. So, my conclusion is that students should be exposed to the major contributions, the outcomes, to use the language, Chris's language, including multivariate thinking means discussing confounding. And for me, discussing confounding means dealing with the butterfly fallacy, the cornfield conditions, and somehow ranking the resilience of an association to unknown or unmeasured confounders. Thank you.